When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
An Erio's original.
Mama! Welcome to The Mother of All Shows, the podcast that takes a deep dive into motherhood and parenting with a comedic twist. Because if we can't laugh that we started the Halloween countdown 87 days ago, then we're all screwed. I'm your host, Kimmy Gatewood. We haven't had a new show in a while because I've been lucky enough to be working, but mourning the loss of my favorite job ever, Glow. And sadly, we only have one more episode of Mother of All Shows left. And I just want to thank all the fans out there. I couldn't do this without you. Hopefully we will come back next year. Please continue to write to us and share with parents. Today on the show, we have an amazing guest to talk about domestic workers. Domestic workers are the nannies that take care of our children, clean our homes, and care for our loved ones. They have been on the front lines of this pandemic. These are essential jobs that keep the wheels of society working. They also are some of the lowest waged workers in this country. As I mentioned, I've been working over the past couple of months. Our immediate family is not nearby, and my husband and I have had to rely on our nanny and our friend's support to raise our daughter and keep up with an erratic career in the arts. In lean years, it's been hard to pay for childcare, but I'm a huge advocate for making time for yourself and career while your child is getting all the attention he or she needs. If you only give 50% to everything, it's hard to feel like you're good at anything at all. Our nanny's a part of our family, and we love her. So my guest today is Ai-Jen Poo. She is the co-founder and executive director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, a nonprofit organization working to bring quality work, dignity, and fairness to the growing number of workers who care and clean in our homes, the majority of whom are immigrants and women of color. Our conversation gave me hope, which during these times has been hard to come by. So here's our chat. So thank you so much for joining me today. You're quite an amazing, accomplished human being who is a recognized genius. So I feel pretty cool talking to you right now.
Well, I feel cool talking to you. You got comedian in your title. That's the best. You make people happy. So good.
You know what? I'm working on overtime right now, you know?
We need the laughs. Mm-hmm. We really need the laughs. It's a key survival strategy of the Rona.
I think, I'm trying to pass it on to my child, and I think she's taken it along pretty well. We're going to be talking today about you and the work that you do, because, you know, we've done a lot of talking about what the pandemic has kind of, you know, bubbled up to the surface, as they say. I wouldn't be surprised if a volcano erupted in the middle of Los Angeles.
Enough bubbling already.
You know, one of the things as a parent is obviously childcare and the lack thereof. It's really kind of exposed how difficult it is to be a working parent. And it also, you know, we've seen a lot of headlines about nursing homes and mm-hmm. how the older population is, you know, locked in their rooms or, you know, but it's not just about, you know, the children and the older folks. It's also about the people who have to do the work and also are in danger, you know, of getting sick, and underpaid. And, it's pretty overwhelming to think about. Can you talk about your work?
Yeah. Well, so at the National Domestic Workers Alliance, we represent the millions of women, mostly women of color, who work mm-hmm. as nannies, house cleaners, and home care workers. And they're basically caring and cleaning and holding up our families, our households, and their own. And it's some of the most important work in the world. I mean, where would we be if we couldn't rely on good care for the people that we love the most? And yet it's totally undervalued in our world. It's like, invisible. It's not even considered real work. We still call it help. And yet it's a profession for so many people. And it's a profession that the workers, the domestic workers, the home care workers, the nannies that I know take so much pride in the work that they do. And they love to provide care and they know how important it is. And thanks to this pandemic, the rest of us are pretty clear. It's actually really important. And I think that even though the problems associated with the work seem so big sometimes, and they are historical and we can get all into that, I think this is one of the biggest moments of opportunity to really change how we value and protect this work of caring and how we invest in it and support it, and also how we just support our families better. I mean, we all care. We all have people we love, who we worry about, who we are responsible for ensuring their safety and their well-being. And it's an issue that connects all of us. And we should have public systems and infrastructure to support that. And up until this point, we haven't really done it. We've relied upon this workforce of women of color that's underpaid to do it. And that's what we can change now. Now that we see, and we can't unsee what we've seen in the Rona, we can actually do something. We can take action to change things.
Yes, so preach. Yeah. That's great news. I also feel hopeful. It's like a gnarly thing to kind of like, you know, uncover, but also, you know, the people that help clean our house, the nannies, the babysitters, just that I need when I do like 14-hour days on set or something. The people that keep me sane and able to be an active member in society and like keep up, stay active in the workforce. Because, you know, as a woman, a working woman, oftentimes if you do take off to take care of your child, because it's usually the women, you will be left behind and it increases the pay gap. It's so many things.
It's so many things. It's so interconnected. It's, and we're seeing right now in the COVID crisis that a lot of women are opting to leave their jobs because their kids are struggling at home with online learning and they need more support. And there's just not the infrastructure in place to support working parents, especially moms. And we're the only developed country that doesn't have clear infrastructure in place to support families with childcare.
Yeah, and makes my blood boil.
It really does. It's just a place where we've been so far behind and at great peril to women and women of color in particular and the workforce. My goodness. I mean, we lose some of our best caregivers to other low-wage jobs like fast food and retail because people can't survive on the incomes they earn doing this work. And they don't have sick days. 82% of domestic workers didn't have a single paid sick day going into the COVID crisis. And then they lost their jobs and their income and didn't have health care and all the things. And so it is definitely time for a change. And like I said, I think people are awakened to it and we can start to make that change. I'm hearing everybody talk now about the need to invest in childcare and to support our childcare workers. I'm hearing people talk about how we have to change our long-term care system to make sure that our elders have more support to be able to stay at home and age at home instead of in nursing homes, which are apparently vectors of the COVID virus, right? And so we know how to keep people safe. We know how to make these jobs better, and it's now on us to make that happen.
Yeah. So one of the number one things I hear from parents, especially like, you know, when I get a panic call from any friend who's just like, I'm pregnant. What am I going to do? You know, the first I'm like, it's going to be okay. You're not the first person in the world to get pregnant. like the number one thing, and I'll say this only about people in the United States because other people, other countries have it covered, like we said, is they're like, how am I going to afford to take care of this child? Will I have to stop work? And it's such a conundrum, right? It's like, if you're you need to be able to pay for the childcare, which people can't afford, or you're paying more for your childcare than what you're making. And then the workforce isn't making enough to survive and take care of their own children. It's just this like vicious cycle. How do we find a solution for that and or clarify the information, get the right information out there?
Well, you're right. It's such an impossible situation for everyone involved. And I mean, the reality is that 70% of the workforce in this country pre-COVID, this is before everything kind of fell apart.
The before times, I guess.
This is the before, the BC times. Before that, 70% of the workforce earned less than $60,000 per year.
Wow.
And the average cost of childcare in this country is about $9,000 per year. And obviously, many of us pay much more. And the average cost of a private room in a nursing home is about $100,000 per year. You could probably get a shared room for like $60,000 a year, maybe.
Oh my God. I did not realize it cost that much money.
Yeah. And so the numbers actually do not add up. It is literally impossible. It's not just like we feel it's impossible. It emotionally feels impossible, that too. But it's actually literally impossible to afford the care you need for most people in America who work really hard. They're doing everything right. Nobody did anything wrong here, you know? And that's, it just goes to show that what we've been treating as kind of an individual responsibility of like, if you're going to have a kid, you're going to have to just figure it out, right? Or you have a parent who needs care, you just have to figure it out. And if you can't figure it out, you're a bad parent, you're a bad mom, or you're a bad daughter. No, like that's crazy. Like this is not, it just doesn't work. And we need public systems in place. We need a shared plan where we can basically have the infrastructure, the support. Like when we think about infrastructure, we think, okay, we need roads and bridges and transportation systems because that's how commerce works and that's how the economy works. Well,
we need one giant, we need one giant bounce house for all the children.
Yeah, exactly.
Throw them in the bounce house.
Totally, that too. And I think about care as part of that infrastructure that we need. And in our vision, right, my organization and our coalition, Caring Across Generations, that we're a part of, that's been really trying to reimagine how we could provide the care that we need for everyone who needs it and support the workers, make it affordable. We've been working on this problem for over a decade now, and our vision is to create something called universal family care. And what it is a pretty simple idea that there would be one fund that we all contribute to, that we can all benefit from, that helps us afford childcare, long-term care, support for people with disabilities, and paid family leave. Basically, everything you need to take care of your family while you're working. And
humanity.
Yeah, exactly. It's like quality of life for your elders and your babies have somebody actually nurturing their potential all the time. And it's pretty fundamental. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, but wouldn't that be too expensive and deficits and, and literally we are paying so much for care already out of pocket in incredibly expensive and inefficient ways. And what this would do is allow it to be collectivized in a way that would make it so much more affordable and accessible to everyone. And it would allow us to raise the wages for the workers. I mean, if most of us are barely making a living wage, how do we pay our caregivers a living wage? We can't do it. We need to collectivize that responsibility.
You were talking a little bit ago about the historical context of domestic workers, and I'd be really curious to hear more about that.
Yeah, well, so, you know, when we think about domestic work, the work itself is always, has always been associated with women, work that women have done and carried in our families and in our communities. And it's kind of always been taken for granted or assumed that women will do, like caring and caring for children and cleaning. And as a profession, domestic work has always been associated with women of color and in particular, Black women. Mm-hmm. And some of our first domestic workers in the United States were actually enslaved women from Africa. Mm-hmm. And that legacy of slavery has shaped the conditions of this workforce from day one. And, you know, a really good example of this is that in the 1930s, when Congress was putting into place our labor laws that would be a part of the Great New Deal to help us recover from the Great Depression and kind of reset our policy and our economy for this next generation, there were two big pieces of labor law that were debated in those times, and Southern members of Congress refused to support them.
Boo.
If they included domestic workers and farm workers who were Black workers at the time. Mm. And so in a concession to those Southern Dixiecrats, the National Labor Relations Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act, which are like core pillars of our protections for workers that we celebrate every Labor Day, excluded domestic workers. And every generation of domestic workers has fought as a result for basic recognition. And underneath that exclusion and many that followed is a story that the work is not real work and the people who do it are not real workers and they're less than fully human and worthy of equal protections under the law. And that whole narrative is rooted in the legacy of slavery and a narrative that still persists to this day. I think that we still live in a society that is very much structured by a hierarchy of human value that values the lives and contributions of some more than others, and certainly of white men over everyone else. And it shows up in our economy in so many ways. And I think the clearest example is in domestic work. And so this workforce today is still mostly women of color. We're still fighting for inclusion in 1930s labor laws. Can you believe that? Literally.
Wow. That's awful.
It's insane. And at the same time, we're not only fighting those exclusions, we're actually resetting the labor laws. So thanks to the brilliant organizing of Black women over many generations, we stand on the shoulders of incredible Black women and other women of color who have fought and organized and paved the way for our movement and won progress. We are still organizing and our movement is stronger than ever before. And we are winning policy at the state level. We have a federal domestic workers bill of rights that Senator Harris and Congresswoman Jayapal introduced last year that we're fighting for. And we just launched a Black women's agenda called the Unbossed Agenda that is a new vision for how Black domestic workers can be truly valued and cared for in our society. And so we're moving, we're building, we're organizing, and we're making progress. And I'm really hopeful because of it. I think that when women come together and demand what we deserve and organize and build our power, we are just unstoppable.
What's crazy about what you're talking about right now is like a lot of the conversations that are bubbling up in this like pandemic times that it all comes back to racism in our country and we have mm-hmm. not dealt with it at all. And it affects everyone's pay. It affects their livelihood. It affects their mental health. It affects their births. It affects everything. So
yes.
We are all
part of a story in this mm-hmm. country that has completely devalued Black lives. Mm-hmm. And we are all responsible for changing that. It's our collective project. It really is.
And what you're doing is so smart in terms, you know, that policy really does, you know, like, and policy and laws really do make changes.
Yep. You got to vote. Mm-hmm. You got to advocate for policy change. And you got to face the truth. Exactly what you're saying is we've never fully reckoned with how deeply embedded racism is in every aspect of our culture and in our economy. And until we face that truth, we are not going to be able to move forward and make the kind of great leaps forward towards the country that we deserve. And I think that what's happening right now is that truth, that moment of truth, right? That truth telling and a moment of opportunity for us to face our history with courage, right? And humility, and to really reckon with it in such a way that we can actually find the policy solutions and take the actions that will be required of us to move forward together as a country. Yes.
Yeah. Universal family care, baby.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine if we all had universal family care? Like, what would your life be like if you had universal access to childcare, to elder care, to paid leave, that all you had to worry about was actually spending when you are with your family, you get to actually be present with them. And then when you're at work, you get to actually be present with your work. Mm-hmm. And you actually get to, you don't feel alone in your responsibilities to take care of the people that you love.
You don't feel like a burden onto a company just because you had a child or have an aging parent, you know?
It seems so simple, but it feels like you can almost imagine how liberating it would feel.
Here's what it would feel like, not having to panic that you're like, I forgot to book a babysitter, and just having flop sweats flying out of your armpit and just calling everybody around. You're just like, are they available? How's the 16-year-old next door? Is she available?
Right.
How much does she charge? Everybody charges something different. Some are $15 an hour. Some are $30 an hour.
Oh my
gosh. I need the cheap babysitter tonight. I can't afford the expensive babysitter, you know? Like, it's all, like, I don't have any family. I have tons of family. My family doesn't want, like me. Whatever it is, it would just, those, like, that's very simple act of not having to have, like, a butt-clenching panic every time you have to go somewhere would be great.
That's really vivid and actually a great description. The butt-clenching panic is actually what it is.
Yes. I have a very tight ass, but is it the butt clenching panic? Yes, it's from my child, but we're gonna make it through. Can you talk about the term sandwich generation? This is something that is on a lot of my mom groups. My mom had me when she was 20, so I don't have to. She's only 20 years younger than me. I mean, older than me, which is such a weird thing to think about now. But we're not dealing with. She's still pretty young, but there are people, you know, that have older parents, sick parents, and then they're little babies and they're
four-year-olds,
you know.
Totally. No, there's tens of millions of sandwich generation family caregivers who are literally in the most impossible situation because we call it the panini effect, because it's like sandwich feels kind of gentle. Panini is when you're like smushed, right? And you really are like paninied between the pressure of managing care for your parents who are aging and maybe they have Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia or, right? And as our parents are living longer, the need for care just explodes, right? And then at the same time, have young children, right, who are also in need of care. And managing both is literally crazy making. And people do it. They somehow figure it out and go to work full time because they have to. They don't have a choice.
Because you have to pay $200,000 on both ends?
Yes, exactly. Oh, it's insane. It's totally, totally insane. It makes no sense. And it's only getting worse. Like, the ranks of the sandwich generation are growing because right now, the millennials are starting to have children at a rate of 4 million babies born per year. And then the boomers are aging. And so every day, 10,000 people turn 70 in our country. And because of advances in technology and healthcare, people are living longer than ever. And the 85 and older generation is actually the fastest growing segment of our population right now.
Wow.
So we're about to have a huge older population and all these people smushed in between trying to figure out how we care for everybody.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And those sandwich generation heroes and cheeros are the ones who are really on the front lines of the care crisis right now, in particular in the midst of the COVID crisis. And we got to send our love out to them, but they need more than love and applause, boy. They need some real help.
Oh my God. So what you're saying is I need to revamp the Golden Girls for the 85 and older generation.
Completely. We need to reboot. Oh my gosh. If you did that, it would be so successful. I guarantee you.
We got to figure this out now because we're going to be there. What happens if we don't, if we stay this current course? What's going to happen to the aging generation?
Right now, we are solutions are patchwork at best. We don't have any long-term care support, really, infrastructure in this country. If you are able to afford it, you can buy long-term care insurance, which is a private market product, but it's very expensive and pretty limited in what it covers. And so most people say that it doesn't cover what they want when they need it. And so it's not a great product. Or you can totally deplete your assets so that you can be eligible for Medicaid and get access to long-term care through Medicaid. But there's a bias within the Medicaid system towards nursing homes. So in a whole bunch of places, your only option for care through Medicaid is to go to a nursing home. And we've seen how well that's worked out in the COVID crisis. And not to say that there aren't some good facilities out there and there will always be a need for nursing homes. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, people have said they want to be able to age in their homes, in their communities, connected to their families and the lives that they knew. And they should have that option. And we just don't have the home care workforce in place to support them because home care workers on average in the United States make about $16,000 per year.
That's tragic. And those are all United States citizens, right? Not non
That's everybody. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, I don't know what it's like in LA, but you can't survive off of $16,000 anywhere
I've lived
in this country. Right?
I mean, rent is at least I was $2,000 for a two bedroom. Blah! That's crazy.
It's insane. So you can't, so that's where there's high rates of turnover and we don't have the workforce in place to support all of our elders to be able to age at home. But the good news is I know this sounds very overwhelming and I don't think that people need more things to be overwhelmed by, but I do want to say
more things to clench their butts.
Right, exactly. I do want to say that we know how to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. We really do. We absolutely do. There are a whole set of really smart policy solutions to be able to make care more affordable and accessible, to be able to make home care more accessible, and to raise the wages for the workers. And all we have to do is elect people who care about care. Mm-hmm. And that's why voting is so important. I mean, we're coming up, Kimmy, on this election that is
What you say? There's an election coming up?
It's really, really, really a big deal for so many reasons. Everything is on the ballot this year, including care and our ability to care for the people we love. And so that's my little PSA for voting.
So you're talking about voting for people that will vote for care, or are you saying that there are measures in which normal folks can actually vote yes on a measure? LA has like a ton of like measures that you vote on.
I was more referring to electing people who are going to actually move the policy solutions that make sense forward. But there are probably some places where there are ballot initiatives about care. There was one a few years ago to create universal home care in Maine that unfortunately didn't go through, but it was really groundbreaking and exciting. And I think we're going to look at what other places we could do something like that in the future. But what we need ultimately are laws passed that fund our caregiving systems. And there are plans. I mean, one of the candidates for president announced a whole plan to put caregiving in the center of economic recovery. Vice President Biden and Senator Harris, their economic recovery plan has three pillars to it. And one of those pillars is investing in our caregivers. And it's a really bold plan to make sure that access to care is expanded and our care workforce has good wages and protections, and family caregivers like the Panini Sandwich Generation have the support they need. So there are plans and there are candidates talking about them. And
If anybody has any questions on who they should vote for, we should just do like a day in a life scenario where you have to take care of a 5-year-old doing kindergarten on Zoom, work a full-time job, and also worry about your mother. See how that scenario plays out.
See how everybody fares with that, right?
I have a question for you. We were talking, about how women mostly take on the burden. How have you reckoned that in your own personal life, taking care of a child, working, and what are your personal, how do you personally take care of all the responsibilities in relationship with domestic workers yourself?
Well, let's see. I'm really lucky because I am part of a 4-parent squad for Addie. Addie has 4 parents, her mom, her dad, her stepdad, and me. And that's actually a really good ratio, by the way.
Oh my God.
A 4-to-1 ratio. 4 adults per kid is actually a decent ratio.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And you know what? It's really funny. You started with like, I'm really lucky because, and that's usually the people that can make it through to like make it all work, is that always starts with I'm really lucky because. It's been a fascinating, I mean, I'm a podcast host, but these are the studies that I do when I listen to people.
No, it's really important data points you're gathering here.
Yeah, thank you so much. So you have your squad, your 4-to-1 squad.
I have my 4-to-1 squad, and we have Addie with us every other week. And also part of our squad is one of her best friends' mom, who is overseeing and supporting her learning pod with 2 of her friends who are also in 4th grade. And so we've got all these just incredible caring adults who are helping us make it work. And so between the 4 grown-ups who are parents and the amazing Julie, who is helping oversee the 4th grade day-to-day life of the girls, we have just really been blessed. And I think I would say that in general, that care has to happen in these squads. Like this whole idea of nuclear families and the ways in which we have these weird defined roles and expectations. I think we should just go back to a squad model where we just, we have our teams of people who team up to make sure that the people we love have lots of great adults in their lives to support them and encourage them. And we actually design for that.
And so you're saying I can join your commune?
Yes. You can join the commune, and there can be a nanny, and there can be a cleaner, and we're all in this together. Yeah, and yeah. Everybody's got a position to play, and it's really important.
Yes, I'm a part of a pod. So there's two families. We've been sharing a nanny since our girls were born, and there's three children all together, four adults, a nanny, and then we each have our own, like, people who help clean our house. I mean, it takes a damn village, and they're not joking. And I think that the pandemic has definitely proven that. It's like you just need to like ask for help.
Yes. Yes.
It would be
exactly.
Nice to not have to ask for help all the time, but you have to. Like, it definitely whatever the patriarchal. TV show or policy that like put it into women that they have to do it all in the 80s, like you can have it all. It doesn't exist and you need help.
No, no. I actually think it's like for us to take pride in asking for help mm-hmm. and to actually wear it as a badge of honor is mm-hmm. really, really important because it is the part of the reason why we have not invested in these relationships and this work of care has become so invisible is because we haven't actually said this is hard. This mm-hmm. is we actually need each other and to really make that visible, I think, is part of the project here. And it's not just for childcare. I mean, my grandmother, she just passed away recently, Mother's Day.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. No, it was really hard because, I mean, she's my all-time number one hero and played a huge role in raising me. And, you know, her care squad was my mom, who was her full-time caregiver, plus she had two home care workers, Georgia and Michael, who were amazing. And they taught us the rules of the road. Like, there were tricks of the trade that you only know when you're full-time caring for people. And it's skilled work. It's difficult work. And there's an art and there's a science to it. And it is so much that it really does require my mom and Georgia and Michael. And when I was able to come, me and my sister who lives, you know, three blocks away and her husband and everybody was part of the care squad in this situation and played different positions, but it was everybody's role was essential. And we got to just make all of that visible and not only visible, but like celebrate it in a different kind of way so that we know that we need to invest in it in a different way. Did you see that story recently with this California state legislator, Buffy Wicks, who was literally 1 month after giving birth to her kid and asked if she could submit her vote for a critical bill remotely because she was literally recovering from just having given birth.
Yeah.
And they said no. Mm-mm, mm-mm. So she had to bring her 1-month-old baby to the floor with her to cast her vote. And she... good for her. She did so and like told the story. And that's, I think, part of what we have to do in order for things to start to shift is to say, hey, this is not real, guys. Like mm-hmm. we have families. They are yeah. humans. And it is the most important, one of the most important aspects of our lives. And you don't leave that part of who you are behind just because you go to work.
Do you
it's
think
all
that,
part of it.
Do you think after women give birth, like their partner, like we should just like injure them as well so they have to recover? like everybody just like, sorry, we're just going to have to slice your leg a little because like it, we need it to be equal. And in order for mothers to be visible, you're going to just have to suffer a little bit.
Oh, I love that idea. Well, I don't know if it's like...
Because where was her husband? That's my point.
Right, exactly. And,
but, you know what I'm saying.
I do. I do know what you're saying. It's like, how do we get to the kind of consciousness shift, the real culture shift that like makes that demand of her to show up after one month with her mm-hmm. 1 month old baby? How do we make it so that we have a culture where that is absolutely unconscionable, unacceptable, mm-hmm. unfathomable? Like, that's where we got to go. And I don't know. Is it cutting someone's leg? Maybe. Yeah. I don't
know. Let's find out. No. Where is that utopia in the world that they've got it figured out, or 90% figured out?
You know, I hate this question because it's always like, yeah, the Scandinavian country.
Sweden. Yeah, right. and I have a cousin in Finland, and I'm just like, wow, you guys got it figured out. You really did it. Congratulations.
Yeah. I mean, they got other problems, but yeah. They figured out this piece of how we build care infrastructure and mm-hmm. treat it as infrastructure. And it does make all the difference, I think. And one thing I will say, though, is I don't think anybody's really figured out this question of how we value the workers. Mm-hmm. And I think that we could, in this country, become global leaders in treating the care workforce as a valued profession. And that's where I would like to see us go, is like, right now we're kind of at the bottom of the barrel, but I think we could make a big leap and maybe get into the playoffs.
Yeah, squad goals.
Right?
Tell me about your podcast, Sunstorm.
Oh, yeah. So have you ever been in a storm where it's raining really hard and maybe even hailing a little bit, but just pouring, but mm-hmm. somehow, miraculously, the sun is still shining through? Have you ever
yes.
seen that?
Yes, okay. I have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is what we call a sunstorm. And after the 2016 election, my colleague and dear, dear friend, Alicia Garza, and I were talking, and she was in the middle of a sunstorm in Minnesota. And we were like, oh, we are in a political sunstorm right now. We are in this moment where all of these attacks on our democracy and our norms and our just constant threats. It was like the Muslim ban and then family separation, so much happening. And we were like, at the same time, there were so many people showing up with such grace and strength, like the women who showed up to march in unprecedented numbers, and then who showed up at town halls to protect our health care, and then to show up to stop families from being separated at the border, and then to show up to run for office, and then to show up to vote in unprecedented numbers in 2018, and just all of the ways in which people were showing up with such light in the midst of these unprecedented storms, especially women, mm-hmm. were the inspiration for us to launch this podcast and call it Sunstorm, and to basically have it be an offering to all of the people who are trying to show up in the midst of these unprecedented storms and supporting them to do that however we know best. And so that's the show. And the new season that just launched with an episode with Megan Rapinoe, who is just a total genius.
That's so cool. Person. My daughter would be freaking out right now.
Oh my God. I almost passed out multiple times during the interview because of the sheer brilliance. But yeah, it's all about finding your lane this season. So we'll be talking to people about what it means to find your lane and contribute in the way that feels like authentic and true to who you are and helps us through the storms.
What a fun way to like think about finding your lane. It's like there's a lot of cacophony and chaos. It's like finding the thing that, you know, to focus your efforts and passion on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, because it is what we do that defines us. Not the television shows we yell at.
Correct. It is what we do. And we all have a lane. That's the beautiful thing about it is like mm-hmm. you don't have to carve it out. There is one there. You just got to find it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. You are just a delightful person to talk to. And I love the optimism. And, you know, we talk about some pretty hard topics, but the optimism and the steps that you're taking to make a change are just so inspiring.
Thank you.
And how can people get involved? And
people can look us up at domesticworkers.org. And if you want to learn more about Universal Family Care, you can go to universalfamilycare.org. And follow us, listen to our podcast, Sunstorm. You can download it anywhere you get your podcasts. And yeah, this was so fun to talk to you, Kimmy. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to a genius who's funny too. So.
I'm clenching my butt right now.
Yeah! We did it! She's making diamonds!
What this last year has taught us is the future is uncertain and we need each other. We also need to support change through legislation that pays a living wage to the people cleaning our homes, taking care of our grandparents and aging parents and kids. Our loved ones and the people that care for our loved ones deserve a better system. We will all benefit. That's our show. I want to thank my guest, Ai-Jen Poo, and the organization she created, the National Domestic Workers Alliance. She has been advocating for the workers supporting our families and society for generations. Domestic work is real work and hard work. They deserve a living wage. Please reach out to me through our website, motherofallshows.com, if you have any questions, thoughts, or topics you'd like to hear. We are also all over social media at MOASPod. This podcast is produced by Jen Perilini, music by Jerome Kurtenbach, and edited by Lauren Bancroft of Pingcroft Loft. I am a proud part of the Erios Network. Please subscribe and rate the Mother of All Shows on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. It would really help us out, like voting. But stay active after the election. Change will happen if you stay engaged. We will have links to the topics and resources we discussed today on our website. And for old time's sake, I boo-boo butt you.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.